Welcome to episode 84 of the Fertility Podcast. If this is your first listen, welcome. I hope wherever you are in your fertility journey, that if you've been listening to this podcast, they've been useful. If you are struggling with anything, then I hope you find some answers in what I have been putting together for you. My background is that after having fertility treatment in 2014 and a background in broadcasting, I wanted to just put something out there for you to absorb, because it can be so overwhelming trying to read all this stuff. And there's so much information about when you're trying to start a family that I hope that the wonders of a podcast, with you just being able to plug it into your ear hole and carry on with your day, whether you're walking the dog or you're on a commute, that this is useful and a useful way for you to consume information. Now, in this episode, I'm going to be exploring egg freezing, which is something that I don't really understand about whether it's a good idea or not, because there just doesn't seem to be enough published stats about babies born from frozen eggs. Not frozen embryos, frozen eggs. So I want you to have a listen to the two ladies who I'm going to be speaking to, who have both frozen their eggs. They're quite different accounts. One is in the UK and one is in America. So have a listen, and I'd be really interested on hearing your feedback. So now I'm going to welcome Gemma Kennedy to the podcast, who is a screenwriter and playwright, to talk about her egg freezing experience, as it's a topic that I've touched on a bit with the Fertility Podcast, and I'm keen to understand more from Gemma and her experience, having read some articles that she's written about it not being possibly the most positive experience as to how she feels about it now. So Gemma, welcome to the podcast. Hope you're well.
Yes, good, thanks.
So can we start at the decision to freeze your eggs? Because am I right in saying you were 39 when you did that?
No, I was a couple of years older.
Okay.
And my decision was complicated, but essentially stemmed from the fact that I met my now husband when I was around 41, 42, I can't quite remember. He is a widower with a young, well, a daughter who's now 20, actually. I always sort of thought I wanted to have kids one day, but I mean, I was too busy doing other things, and to be honest, I hadn't met the right person. And when I met him, I knew that this was the guy. If I was going to have kids, it would be with him. Because of his personal circumstances and because of what had happened in his life, he was very clear that he didn't want any more children. So 6 months in, which was pretty early in our relationship, we sort of had a big discussion about it, and I felt that it was a good idea to freeze my eggs, because I felt that we might break up, or he might drop dead, or, I mean, you know, you just don't ever know. There's a variety of variables that can come into play. And I just thought, well, also I thought, to be perfectly honest, he might change his mind. And I just had a friend who had gone through egg freezing at 39 and actually got pregnant at about my age with her frozen embryo with sperm donor. So she's one of the very, very few successful live births with egg donation that I actually now know about. But so I sort of thought, well, this obviously can work. So it just felt like the classic safety net that everyone talks about. So I went into it for all those reasons and chose a clinic and went through the process and came out the other side thinking, I'm not sure that was a great idea. And more that I felt I just wasn't treated very well, and the whole experience had a kind of a bit of a whiff about it of exploitation that I just really didn't like. And on the basis of that, I started to write and research my play for the National, which is still in development.
Let me just hold you there for a sec, because I'm keen to kind of gauge your feeling of support or lack of support from the clinic. So when you first made the inquiries and the kind of conversations that you were having about it, was there discussions about counselling available to talk you through what you were doing or the implications of it?
None. And again, it's so interesting looking back, and this is one of the things that makes me most angry about the behaviour of some of the clinics, because let's be very clear, some of them are highly ethical and have a very different way of working. I went in a state of kind of panic, emotional panic, emotional upset, you know, sort of trying to handle this scenario of, well, my, you know, my boyfriend, we're in love and I want his kid and he doesn't want mine and what do I do? And I was in a very sort of, it was a bit, quite a state of turmoil.
And vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember having a consultation with my female consultant, who was perfectly pleasant. I was in there for about 15 minutes, I think. And she said, well, we don't normally do, I explained my situation. She sort of said, yeah, I get it. And I said, then she said, well, we don't normally do egg freezing in women of your age because the chance of success is so low. And she said, you know, it will be this percentage, 5%, whatever. And I said, okay. And she said, but if you really want to go ahead with it, we can do it. Obviously, then I'd also had my sort of fertility MOT, and she had said to me, well, your egg reserves are very low. And, you know, if you're going to do this, you should do it ASAP, because in 3 months you could have no eggs left. We just don't know.
Wow. So a lot to take on.
It's a lot to take on. And that's a big statement. And in retrospect, I have to say, what the hell did I know? I did actually think to myself in darker moments, was that right? I mean, obviously, she showed me my figures. But I mean, I didn't have anything to compare it with. So clearly I wasn't being lied to. But I'm just trying to explain the context in which I went into this meeting with someone sort of nodding, saying, yes, yes, yes. Well, we don't normally do it. It will be very low, but we're happy to do it if you're prepared to do it. Yes, fine, sign me up. So no, they didn't offer me counselling. The only time counselling came up was a sort of 6 weeks into the procedure when I was going mad with hormones and stress. I asked about counselling, and they handed me a sheet with someone's name on it and said, here you go, she's £100 an hour, whatever it was, and that was the end of it. So what I felt was, and I felt this even more coming out of the procedure, was that I was on a bit of a factory conveyor belt, and that actually there wasn't a great care of duty, there wasn't a great investment in my situation, and that actually it was only after I had the procedure and came out with a pretty poor result, which again, they made no promises that it would be otherwise, that I came out of it thinking they really just took my money and did it. And they sort of kept their side of the bargain, but it doesn't feel like a great way to treat a client. I had lots of conversations after that with other people, especially when I was researching the play. He was sort of saying, did you ask them how many successful egg freezing babies had been, how many babies had been born to egg freezing? And I said, no. In fact, it was Professor Robert Winston who said that to me. Why didn't you ask? And I said, because it was the last thing on my mind.
Yeah.
But there you go. That's what I'm talking about. People in that kind of vulnerable emotional state are not the best equipped to be practical.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that was in any way a deliberate move on their part, but I just think that if I had had a bit more time, if I'd had someone talk to me, if I'd had somebody say there, have you really thought through the implications of this? Let's talk about the kind of results we're looking at. Let's talk about the statistics. Let's talk about the fact you're going to have your eggs in storage, and then you're going to have to decide if you want to let those eggs go if we're successful. All those kinds of things which you cross at the time that you come to them, but they're big, big things. And I just felt that no one really spent any time preparing me for any of those decisions. So I did feel, I thought there was a lack of duty of care.
Can I ask, if you'd have gone into that conversation with the consultant and she'd outright said to you, there's just no point, how would you have felt, do you think?
It was a really good question, and it's one I've asked myself many times. And I'm very clear that I may have said, OK, well, then I'll go somewhere else. So once again, I'm trying to be really clear here that I in no way feel that I was lied to or misled. But this is the grey area that I'm talking about. This is the level of non-transparency that a lot of these clinics, I think, having talked to other people who've gone through it, deal in, which is that they of course they don't mislead or lie to you. Well, some may do, I'm not sure. But what they don't do is give you the facts and figures, and they would never offer. No clinic in their right mind is going to say, just so you know, we haven't ever had a live birth from a frozen egg of women over 35, which is what I've since discovered. That's the statistic of my clinic. You know, and in a way, if I'd asked for that information, they may have said, well, it's this. They may have also said, oh, I can't give you those figures to hand, which is something we hear a lot. So I think that there is a very, very fine line between an unethical misleading, which I don't think this is, but I think that my experience does bleed into a lack of transparency, a lack of proper time and consideration, a lack of kind of counselling, therapeutic backup support.
Because we're speaking at the end of May, for anybody listening to this podcast, at a later point. And in the Sunday Times in the UK this Sunday, there was an article about women freezing their eggs. And the headline, I don't know whether you saw it was Women Freeze Eggs as Partners Get Cold Feet. And it was talking about women freezing their eggs because men are refusing to commit to starting a family. And what's discussed in this article is absolutely nothing about the success rate of egg freezing. The only stat there is, it says in 2014, the latest year in which figures are available, 816 women in Britain froze their eggs for future treatment, which was a 25% increase from the previous year. So again, as I know you've highlighted in the articles you've written, there are stats on the number of women freezing their eggs, but we are yet to see, because I think you quoted a stat from the HFEA in one of your articles, didn't you, about the live from frozen eggs. Can you remember what that was?
Well, the FHE last time I checked said it was 60 babies born.
Since, I think it was, can you remember since when? Since 2011 or something?
Yeah, possibly even a bit longer.
Right.
It is an incredibly low birth rate. But what's even more important about that is that it doesn't specify how many of those babies were born from eggs frozen by women over 35. And another statistic I quoted in the article was from a doctor, a consultant from a leading fertility clinic who said, I can't remember the exact number, but it's in the Observer article if anyone wants to read it. Let's say he said, you know, 40 babies born through frozen eggs, but a very, very small percentage of those were to women over 35. So even there, there's not a clear line. And I think that now what happens is that when people think about egg freezing, they think safety net insurance policy across the board. It's not. Egg freezing, I believe, is becoming more successful because of new techniques, vitrification and so on. But that is only in the under 35 category. And what we do know is that the majority of women freezing their eggs are over 35. And that's something that is going to continue as women, you know, take time to establish their careers and to become financially independent and find a guy, whatever it is, find a partner, find a woman, for all those different reasons. But the sort of the spin on it is that it's, you can just freeze your eggs at any age, and that's not the case. And that's where there needs to be more information. It needs to be highlighted much more. I went to a conference, as I again mentioned in the article, run by the clinic, where they sort of flash up these statistics saying thousands of babies are now born around the world from frozen eggs. And a doctor at the front, an Italian doctor or a Spanish doctor, said, yes, but the problem is these are for women freezing their eggs below the age of 35. And most of the women who come to my clinic are over 40. So what do we do about those women? And the clinic didn't have an answer for that. There is no answer other than know that you are going into it with a minuscule chance, and be prepared. You have to try and prepare yourself for that as much as humanly possible. So this whole insurance policy safety net thing has become, I think, a little bit of a kind of blind alley and a bit of a red herring. It may well be that if you're freezing eggs in your 20s, when you can get enough eggs to make it, you know, your chances of fertilization and successful implantation work, or in your 30s and you can get, and your eggs are still healthy in their prime. But if you're freezing eggs over 40, you know, it is a very, very, very small chance.
Well, I'll put links to your article in the show notes for this episode. And just referring back to that Sunday Times article that I mentioned before, there's a case study of a 47-year-old lady who is 7 months pregnant after freezing her eggs at 39. She's cited as saying how she feels very lucky that she decided to freeze her eggs, as women aged 39 have a 21% chance of conceiving using IVF, and for women aged 45 and over, this drops to 2%. So near the end of this article, they are showing some stats of actually getting pregnant, but again, we're still lacking any information about the live pregnancy. From your experience and where you are now, you've got different work in progress to in some way kind of capture your experience with regards to egg freezing. What would be the key advice that you would say to anybody who's over 35 thinking about this as an option? Because I personally feel that it's been very misleading, the way it's been reported in the press. And I've even said to friends that are over 35 that may be on their own, what about egg freezing? Not knowing anything about the success rate. So what would your key advice be?
My key advice would be to do your research. You need to go to see those clinics armed with the right questions. You need to ask them about their statistics rate, and you need to not take no for an answer if they fob you off with, oh, we don't have those statistics to hand, we can't remember. I mean, just to give you an example, a journalist I know talked to a clinic and said, can you give me your statistics for babies live births from egg freezing? And the woman said, well, the man at the clinic said, I'm afraid I don't have the statistics to hand. Now, I'm sorry, but if you have a live birth rate, you're going to know how many, because you'll be able to count it on one hand, probably. Do you know what I mean? There is a general rule of thumb in the private clinics that seems to be there's a lot of mystery. They don't offer information. I think if you dig, you'll get it, but they don't offer it. And of course, a lot of people are intimidated to ask it because you're sitting there with a consultant who knows everything and has this wonderful success rate. And so people don't really feel that they can challenge the medical establishment. But I think you can absolutely do that. So I would say be prepared, do your research, know what it is that you want to know about the success rate and the live birth rate. Get some support. And if they don't offer you counselling, which I don't think they are legally obliged to, it is very, very, very a very good idea, I think, to have some counselling if you can before you go through it, and just to really think through as much as you can the implications. What's going to happen if you don't get any eggs? What's going to happen if, you know, if you get some eggs, and are you going to freeze embryos? Are you going to blah, 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 whatever? Because I think that it's unlikely that you will get that in a lot of the clinics. They will just, I mean, I remember very clearly coming around for my anaesthetic in the hospital, you know, with this sort of a curtain between me and the next five women. And I heard the anaesthetist going around telling each woman how many eggs they'd got.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not really an ideal scenario. There's a sort of air of discretion and air of sanctity somehow. You know, here we are in the business of these little miracles and creating kids, and that's all well and good, and they do often create these miraculous births. So I have no doubt in my mind that IVF is an incredible scientific thing, but there are a lot of very confused, scared women and men, you know, who don't know what to do and who don't feel they have any guarantees. And I think just go into it, as you said, as I've said, with as much information as you can. I was contacted after my first article by several women, all who sort of friends of friends or people who knew me through work, often saying, I read your article, I'm considering it, should I do it? Should I have my eggs frozen? And it was a very strange thing, because I had to sort of say each time, well, look, I can't tell you what to do, but I can tell you this is what my experience was like. This is what my friend's experience was like. She froze her eggs at 39 and she got a baby. She was a very fertile woman. She got a very good crop of eggs. She got, I think, 12 eggs in the freezer. So then again, when you go to fertilize and you go to freeze the embryos, you know, each time you do that, you're losing an egg here, you're losing an egg there. So she got it. She had the eggs to spare, if that makes sense. I came out with 3 eggs. So if I was now going to try and get pregnant with any of those eggs, you know, the statistically, the chances are very, very, very small, because I may lose all those eggs when they're defrosted. I may lose them when they're fertilized, et cetera, et cetera. So I couldn't tell those women what to do, but I certainly sort of tried to tell them, well, these are the things I'm now thinking about. And the other thing is very important that no one still really talks about very much is the financial element. So one of these women who I talked to then went ahead and did get her eggs frozen. She was younger than me. She was, I think, her late 30s. She came out, I think, with 4, and her consultant said, right, well, you'll need to come back 3 more times to make it worthwhile at a cost of another $5,000. So she said, I don't have the money. So I've just spent £4,000 on these 4 eggs. What the hell do I do now?
And you have to pay to have them stored, don't you?
Of course. So the problem is that it's not just a one-step solution. Does that make sense? You freeze the eggs, and in a way, that's when the journey starts. Mm. What am I going to do with the eggs? I'm now in this sort of quandary of, do I destroy the eggs? What do I do? Do I let? I mean, it's very, very difficult, and each step has a lot of. It takes its emotional toll, and it takes its kind of mental toll. So, yes, as I said, I think get support, talk it through if you can. You know, join an online forum. Ultimately, it's going to have to be your decision. Try and get some support, some real professional support. So just think about the bigger picture here, and go in. Go in fighting, I would say.
It's all sound advice. I'm going to actually put some links to support outlets that people can look at as well, especially with Fertility Network. And I'm keen to know, from the artistic side, you're working on a play with the National Theatre, and you've talked about a television series, and I know you can't talk too much, but what can you tell me? What can you share?
I can tell you that the play stemmed from, as well as all the kind of emotional and personal stuff that I'd gone through, the thing that I did come out feeling most angry about was the economics. Because for me, again, just in my sort of small experience, it's the final frontier of capitalism. Reproduction has been privatized, and that will only continue to grow as women and men delay having kids. And if you look at socially what's going on in terms of, you know, how hard it is to buy a house, the job market, et cetera, et cetera. In this country, the very sort of strong lack of childcare, free childcare, and not very good paternity, maternity leave, all of those things are going to contribute, and it's going to keep growing. And I think ages are going to get higher, and I think people are going to have more and more problems finding the right time to have a family. So there is no doubt in my mind that this is an industry. And it's very interesting, actually, working in the film and TV and theatre industry, because people always assume that, especially in the film industry, that, you know, it's sort of writers and artists and directors and actors sit around sort of lying on cushions being inspired by the muses. And it is a wonderful industry and it involves amazing creative collaboration. At the end of the day, it is an industry. It's why it's called the film industry. And it is about making money and selling tickets. I have no doubt, again, that there are many, many ethical, wonderful, brilliant doctors out there helping people, and embryologists and consultants and all the rest of it, helping people achieve having kids against the odds, but ultimately they are there to make money. And that is brushed under the carpet. So my play is really about that. And it's, in fact, the sort of backstory is about, it's set in a private clinic. And during the course of the story, that clinic prepares to float on the stock market. And it follows two couples who are both trying to have kids for very different reasons, who sort of get involved in this somehow and end up kind of crossing over and sort of breaking up and swapping partners. And you've got a woman who's frozen her eggs, the career woman. You've got a couple who have unexplained fertility. You have a gay man who would like to have kids without a partner who's considering sperm donation. So it covers quite a lot of issues, but really it's about what this industry does, I think, to what it does to our emotions, what it does to our psyche, how it can brutalize you. I think one of the things that I found very interesting is that the language of capitalism and language of business is very present in private medicine in terms of fertility. It's all about competition. You know, you're told your eggs are subpar, or you've only got X amount of this, or your sperm is swimming fast enough. It's very competitive. I mean, I've been very lucky. I've had so much support and solidarity from all the women I've met, both who work in the industry and who've been through it. But there's also a way in which it becomes very competitive. And I think that's a very painful side effect of trying to have kids and not being able to have kids. You know, that you're constantly surrounded by the success stories, as it were, and that the private industry is all about promoting the success rate. And yet the people who aren't successful, which by and large is still about 65%, are just swept under the carpet. And I remember in writing the play, I spoke to a woman who'd been through everything and eventually given up and adopted. And she's now very happy with her adopted child. But she said to me, I would just love to see a narrative once where there is no happy ending, there is no baby, there is no kind of miracle. And it's just a story that looks at what that failure means for us and what it does to us as a you know, as human beings. So that's really what the play is about. The TV series is a very different story. It's not in any way related to the play. At the moment, we are exploring writing something about egg donation, which is another issue I'm very, very interested in, especially because it's becoming more and more common. And it's another thing that's not talked about. So when you see all these sort of women in their late 40s into 50s into the late 30s having kids, often celebrities, sort of twins at 49, it's never mentioned that they're donated eggs. And I think that it's a growing market, so that's something else I'm very interested in. I'm very early stages with the TV show. The play is much more developed and we're still looking for a director and looking for a home.
Okay, well, we'll keep in touch and hopefully we can talk when you're nearer those points of release. And I'm going to send you actually a few previous episodes, because I actually did a day in the life of an egg donor where I spoke to a lady who was an egg donor and Altrui, who are the altruistic egg donation UK based company, and how they work, which I found really interesting.
I spoke to them doing some research recently. I thought what was wonderful about Altrui is that they were at the complete polar opposite of my experience with my particular clinic. They are clearly incredibly supportive, incredibly kind, experienced, educated, informative people, and everything they do is about minimizing you know, the stress and the distress and maximizing the support network for people who are either donating and or receiving eggs. And so that, you know, again, there are absolutely amazing people out there, there's no doubt about it, and that's great, and I think they should be championed. But I also think that the people who are kind of cutting the corners should also be held to account in some way. And if I can't do that as a lobbyer, I can certainly try and do that through, you know, creative outlet and through art. So let's see.
Well, best of luck. And thank you so much for talking to me, Gemma. I do really appreciate it. And like I say, I'll put links to the articles that you've written on the show notes for this episode.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Gemma.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, coming up, we're going to be hearing from Valerie Landis, who has a different opinion of egg freezing, after this, as recently the Fertility Podcast has gained some support for all the hard work that I do to try and give you a really useful resource. I've got some new sponsors, so you can hear about them now. The Fertility Podcast is supported by OvuSense. If you're trying to monitor your cycle and finding it overwhelming, OvuSense is the only ovulation monitor on the market that is a Class 2 medical device. It has a vaginal sensor and app, and it fits like a tampon, so it's really easy to use and comfortable to wear. You use it at night whilst you sleep, and then in the morning, you simply remove, wash it, and download your data to see your cycle pattern. Now, OvuSense has proven comfortable for women in over 10,000 cycles of use and can predict ovulation up to a day in advance and can confirm it with 99% accuracy. To find out more, visit OvuSense.com. The Fertility Podcast is also supported by IVF Matters, the UK's first online fertility clinic, where you can order tests delivered to your door, have scans at multiple locations, and speak to consultants in the comfort of your own home. It's a truly unique way to experience your fertility journey, and you can find out more at ivfmatters.co.uk. So I'm now going to welcome Valerie Landis, who has a website called Experience, to the podcast. She describes it as being all things egg freezing and sets about just educating women about the whole process. So Valerie, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. This is so much fun.
Tell me about your story, because were you 33? It was your birthday gift to yourself that you decided to freeze your eggs?
Yeah, you know, I started doing a lot of international travel and discovered how much I loved traveling. You know, in my late 20s, I had just gotten out of a relationship of 4 years, and it was kind of my self medication of recovering from that relationship. And I just fell in love with travel. So I decided, you know, for my 30th birthday, I did a solo trip to Paris. It was the first time I'd ever gone there. After having such a great holiday, something happens to women when we turn 30, I think. Almost every decade, you know, something happens. You just enter that new phase in your life. I had, you know, really established my career and work in medical sales and found this new love and passion for travel. So I decided that every birthday I was going to do a big birthday trip. When I hit my 33rd birthday, I had a break from some work travel that I was doing. You know, I was really starting to think about fertility and relationships and how, you know, it had been 3 or 4 years since my last really long-term boyfriend and how I was ready for that next chapter in my life and motherhood and family and everything that comes along with that bucket of cards. And I thought, well, you know, there's not really a man on the horizon and it doesn't seem like it's changing. And I have this, like, you know, really great life, have a great job, and I'm doing really fun things that I enjoy. But that romantic piece, that family piece isn't happening for me yet. So I better freeze my eggs. I mean, I work in the industry, so I kind of like know too much to be dangerous. And I knew that it was a good option for me and had thought about it for a really long time and always said that I would freeze my eggs. It was just a matter of when, not if, when. Okay.
So just stop you there, because you talk about how you work in the field and it was obviously, you know, really prominent as a thing that you do, because it would never have occurred to me to freeze my eggs if I wasn't in a relationship at 33. So do you think that your average woman has the awareness you have when it comes to egg freezing?
I feel like I had a level of education and knowledge about fertility that most women aren't taught or generally know. I've been doing this for so long, almost over a decade, that I kind of forget that the general public maybe doesn't have this awareness. And so that's part of my mission and why I started experience.com, is because when I went through the egg freezing journey myself and decided to take that option as a personal choice for my life, that I really was aware that it wasn't just my circle of friends that didn't know about fertility and egg freezing and all the benefits that come along with that. They weren't thinking about their fertility future like they do their financial future or like their retirement or your career path. And so because it's not taught in schools, I think there is a little bit of a misconception. I mean, I don't know about how it is in the UK, but in the States, we have like fifth grade health class where you learn about sex and your period and birth control and protection. But they don't really tell you how your fertility declines after 30, 35, and significantly at 38, 39, 40. And so I really think that because we're so busy not getting pregnant or trying not to get pregnant, that we're shocked when we are ready to take that leap and enter motherhood. And then we have unexpected infertility, and that could be very devastating. I interview a lot of different women to get different perspectives on their egg freezing journey. Although I really think that I want to talk about fertility as a whole, because egg freezing is the easy part. yeah, it's expensive. It has, you know, a price tag to it, but it's all about priorities. You know, you can buy a really expensive car or you could freeze your eggs. So it's all about like what's important to you. And I kind of had a very good balance of priorities. I knew that family was something I craved and desired and want to have on my own. I have a very deep relationship with a lot of my family members and feel that it's very important. So I think that my awareness was definitely higher. I had been educating my group of friends, my circle, my girlfriend group for years as I progressed through my career in my 20s. You know, I sold birth control to hormone replacement for menopause. I worked on new cancer tests, such as like ovarian cancer and breast cancer, and sold the fertility supplies in all the clinics in the US. So my experience level was definitely above an average everyday girl. And so that's part of the reason why I wanted to start Experience is to reach that broader audience, to break down the geographic lines. As I began to travel more, it was very apparent to me the love of travel and freezing your eggs and kind of giving yourself that freedom go hand in hand, at least for me personally. I met so many great people along my journey backpacking in Europe, you know, going to Machu Picchu and seeing South America and visiting Brazil and all these amazing places. If I had a child, there's no way I could just jet off to Australia. There is something to delaying motherhood till you feel prepared. Also, like I didn't have a parenting partner. I thought the relationship I was in was going in that right direction. And then when I realized and saw some of the warning signals that that relationship didn't have the same values that I did, I ended it. And it was the best decision I ever made, although it was very scary and risky. I mean, who wants to start over at 29? Nobody, right? So that's why my 30th birthday was such a momentum year. And then as each year was progressing, I was realizing, oh, wow, I'm getting closer and closer to 35.
I just want to jump in there because you've obviously like made this decision and it's given you a whole load of freedom with your traveling. And I want to just add in that, you know, the decision to freeze eggs, yes, is giving you that freedom, but it can also be for a whole host of different reasons, whether there's a link to kind of preservation ahead of cancer treatment. So there's all different avenues that this can be an option for you. And I want to also just talk to you about what research you've done and what awareness there is in the States about the success of live births from frozen eggs. Because, for example, the HFEA, which is the government body in the UK, on its website where it talks about egg freezing, in one of the first sentences it has about egg freezing is it says very few babies have been born in the UK after treatment using patients' own frozen eggs. And then it says, although more have been born from donor eggs. Now, that's quite a massive statement if that's the first thing that you look at when you're researching freezing your eggs, because obviously the point of freezing your eggs is to have a family. So from the research that you've done and the conversations that you've had, how have people's journeys gone from freezing their eggs and then having their families from their frozen eggs?
I've talked to an array of women. It does seem like the UK has different protocols for the hormones and medications, where in the States we're very aggressive with the medication. My own personal journey, I had over 23, 24 follicles that were stimulated at one time. And at 33, that's good. You know, I had 17 eggs that were successfully frozen. I've interviewed women that were roughly my same age, you know, that 33, 34, you know, while every woman's body is different, the one thing that was kind of different when I talked to the UK women were they didn't seem like their hormone levels were progressing as quickly or as their ovaries were responding to the medication the same. So I don't know if there's like drug differences from how the stimulation protocols are done. You know, I interviewed a really amazing woman who had dealt with a rape earlier in her 20s and found dating really hard. And she's such an amazing soul, strong, and she didn't want to let that get her down. So she froze her eggs. And when she froze her eggs, she only got 4 eggs. And so she had to do it again, and she got 4 eggs again. So, you know, at a tender middle age in their 30s, she only has 8 eggs. Whereas, you know, as an example, my first freeze, I had 17 that successfully froze. So I do think that there's a little bit of differences between the UK and the States. And maybe that's why, your health systems talk about egg freezing as not enough women have come back and use it. You know, like there's not really solid data, especially in the UK, from women that have turned around and used it. But I will say I've interviewed another woman who froze three times. She was a little older. She was 38, 39. So that's a little on the older side of egg freezing. She froze three different occasions. She went back, decided to use them herself at 40. And I applaud her for choosing single motherhood and being a choice parent. And she decided to use one straw from each of those egg freeze. And so roughly around 3 to 4 straws with like 2 eggs in them each. And she got 2 healthy embryos and she implanted them. And she's now just delivered in February. So she has a healthy baby from her frozen eggs. So, I mean, there's stories both directions. You know, there's a really good friend of mine who's been interviewed a lot in the news and the press and probably one of the first people to talk about egg freezing in a positive light and get rid of that stigma. And she's based in Los Angeles and she froze her eggs right out at the same time, 38, 39, and she successfully froze 11 eggs and only had one viable embryo, implanted that embryo, initially got pregnant, but then they called it a chemical pregnancy. And so she is not successful with her frozen eggs. So I think it really can go either way. Part of the formula, I like to call it egg math, you have to consider is when you froze your eggs. If it was after 2012, which is when the ASRM lifted the ban on egg freezing in the States, you know, most likely your eggs were vitrified, which is a fast freeze. Eggs have a lot of fluid in them, and that causes crystallization in the freezing process, which is not good. Eggs are very fragile. They're unlike any other cell in the body, where sperm's very, you know, viscous and can and handle all the hard nature of freezing. Eggs can't. So when vitrification came out, it really changed the game for egg freezing. So I think, you know, we need to make sure we're comparing apples to apples and not apples and oranges and make sure that we're talking about the same thing because slow freeze has been less successful. So when we talk about rates, you know, it really is a tricky topic. And then age has such a big factor in things or things like endometriosis and sexual health, like STDs and STIs. If you have some of those very debilitating diseases that have been in your medical history, it could cause infertility issues.
So as far as in the States, is there a high figure for then live births or do you not know?
It's slowly progressing. So, you know, the number of women that froze in 2009 was right around that 500 range. And then if you look at 2013 data, the women in the US, 5,000 women froze. Now today, there's closer to like 7, 8, 9, 10,000 women or even more. It's probably jumped to 18. They say, you know, by year 2018, there'll be 76,000 women that have frozen their eggs. So by that time, you know, we'll see more prominent data about the success rates. Okay. I think, you know, there's a combination of having a great physician and also having a very applicable lab. It has to be the combo of the two.
Sure.
You know, you can have a great doctor, but if the lab sucks, the lab sucks.
But I think it's really important to get across that this is an amazing, empowering option, but it's not fail-safe. And I think that's the same with any kind of fertility treatment, that it is an amazing thing that the science is there for us, but it's not your ultimate solution. Because I just think it's really important to state that fertility treatment doesn't always work. And, you know, whatever you're planning on doing with your family planning, as you know, we've talked about, is just to have these backups. But ultimately, if you want to have a family, then address it. Don't give yourself any cause for regrets, really.
Egg freezing is the best technology we have today. Now, there's some exciting technology coming down the pipeline, like, for example, OvaScience, a medical company based out of Boston in the States, is working on some fantastic technology with PC cells. It's precursor cells. It's the cells in the ovarian lining. And so they're basically like premature egg cells that can be grown hopefully in a petri dish, and into mature eggs that would then be able to use as your own egg donor, regardless of your age. Wow. That would be phenomenal. Yeah. So there's amazing stuff like happening. It just, it has to go through those regulatory bodies of being approved. We have the FDA here in the States, and that's tricky. I mean, the FDA is a pretty big beast, and they just don't let anything come to market. There's also some research and work being done with mitochondria cells and giving maybe older eggs a little bit more boost of energy, right? And so then when it's when it's injected with sperm, it can become an embryo and a successful embryo. So there's a number of really great technology on its way, but for the people in that 30 range, age range right now, this is your best technology. Had you been a little bit older, like 40 right now, 40 to 45, you almost missed the window of egg freezing. The women that are in their 20s right now may have newer options that are coming down the pipeline that I wasn't able to take advantage of.
So let's talk about you just for a sec, because you know your stuff, and I'm going to put all the links to your website. There's all blog posts, and there's links to books that you read, and there's lots of links to podcasts that you recommend. It's a great resource for people wanting to know more about it. But I want to know more just about you and where you're at. So you've got a whole load of eggs frozen. And how old are you now?
Oh, I'm approaching my 35th birthday. So I am actually looking at egg freezing again. I was debating about making embryos with donor sperm. I was researching a lot with the sperm banks and things in the States, and also learning about other countries that have very restrictive laws with the sperm banks. So, you know, that has been a very educational process, going through that and you know, browsing the sites as though they're dating websites, but you look at baby pictures. So it's kind of a bizarre thing that I'm wrapping my head around.
So are you planning on embarking on motherhood on your own?
Well, I'm really bad at dating. You know, I want to give myself the most options, the plan A's, the plan B's, the plan C's. I want to give myself the opportunity to change my mind. You know, I don't want to be fixated that my family has to look like XYZ family. I want to be able to say, hey, if I know that I want to be a mom, there's lots of different ways to become a mom. I want to give myself the most opportunities to do that. So for me, what that means is freeze eggs so I can possibly have more than one child, maybe try naturally if Mr. Right comes along. However, I don't see a man in my near to future.
So with all your planning, because you really sound like you set out what you're going to achieve and you get it. Have you got an age that you would like to be a mother, regardless of whether
there's
a man
really good question.
Or... Because it sounds like you're a real planner, and I take my hat off to you in what you have set out for yourself, you know, and what you're also doing with your website and everything. But for you and your plan, is there an age? Have you written it down somewhere? Is it on the fridge?
Unfortunately, I have one of those new fridges that doesn't take, you know,
magnets.
But you know, I do feel like I want to give myself at least till 40. That's 5 more years away from right now. I want to at least give myself till 40 to attempt to find love now. 5 years is going to go by in a flash. I know it. Now, I'm not afraid to do it alone. I think I would be a choice mom. If I'm a choice mom, I've always said maybe I'll just stick with one so I can raise one kid really well instead of trying to divide my headspace into many, you know, juggling parts.
Valerie, look, it's been really fascinating hearing what you've been doing. And I'm going to share all the details, like I've said, of your website on the show notes for this episode. You take care and keep up the good work.
Thank you for having me on the show.
It's been a pleasure
talking to you.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
If this podcast has raised some questions, do share them, natalie@thefertilitypodcast.com. And all the links for my guests are on the show notes, which is thefertilitypodcast.com/frozen. Now, if there's a subject that I haven't yet covered, because I am getting emails from you, which is brilliant, saying, have you done anything on this? Are you going to do anything on this? I'm making a list, so please do let me know if there's something that you'd like to hear more about. Just email natalie@thefertilitypodcast.com. And until the next time,